As the reading indicated, we will be in Genesis chapter 11. Ed, thank you for covering last week. Brother Bob, thank you for covering. When I did finally get to wake up and listen to worship, I enjoyed it very much. We are very, very blessed to have such qualified men to fill in. Let's talk about Wile E. Coyote, and let's talk about Genesis 11, and let's talk about what have we been looking at? We've been looking at how to make 2021 your year, how to make it my year, how to make it the greatest year we have ever had. 1785, Scottish writer Robert Burns wrote the poem, Tae a Mouse. The poem is an apology to a scampering mouse because the farmer's plow has just destroyed its house. The farmer sees what he's done, and so he apologizes to the, unless your lit class included Scottish language poetry, you may have never read it. If you did, you probably did not read it in the original because the original makes absolutely no sense to us because of the Scottish. But the penultimate paragraph might be familiar. There it is in the original, and that's why I said it probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Translated into our version of English versus Scottish version. The title is To a Mouse. And the most famous line or lines in the paragraph read, "The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry." And that actually is where the book of Mice and Men got its idea. We've talked about purpose. We keyed on the fact that the wise man says that the conclusion of all of it in the end is fear God and keep His commandments. That's the purpose. And in it, we talked about other things. You know, I want to be closer to God. I want to be more Christ-like. I want to be more servant-minded. I want to be more evangelistic. But the what or the why and the how, it's fear God and obey. We talked about finding our passion for that. That if it doesn't become this fire in our bones, we might not pursue it. We talked about priority. What is at the top of the to-do list for 2021? What is at the top of my to-do list for today? All of these designed to conquer this year, to overcome 2020, and continue to thrive. Suddenly, at this point, this morning, we need a plan. Without a plan, even though we may have a purpose, a passion, and a priority, we are left running in circles. We're left getting absolutely nowhere and accomplishing absolutely nothing. And no, that's not my weenie dog. Mine will make about two laps and have to fall over and take a break. The problem with plans, however, if we are completely honest, the problem with plans is we are not very good at it. Robert Burns' observation, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. The mouse's best plan was to build a house right there. Wrong place, wrong time, wiped out by a plow. The farmer's plan was to put his field right there. In the mouse's case, wrong place, wrong time, because it destroyed his home. If you look back over your life, especially in the places where you take God out of the planning, What you will probably find is that many, if not all, of your plans have been about as successful as Wile E. Coyote's. We just are not good at it. And there are reasons for it. But if it'll make you feel any better, we're not the first generation. We're not the first generation to watch our best schemes, our best plans crumble at our feet. That is a fact that God pointed out a long time ago. In Proverbs 14 and verse 12, there is a way which seems right to a person, but its end is the way of death. I can make all the plans in the world. I can, from my human perspective, with my limited scope, evaluate every possible outcome, every possible plan. I can re-diagram, redesign, remeasure, recut. But if it's my plan, when it comes to my soul, the end of it is the way of death. It's the wrong plan. Jeremiah 10 and verse 23, Jeremiah observes, I know, Lord. I get it. I can see it. A person's way is not in himself. It is not in a person who walks to direct his steps. God, I don't know where the next step's going to land me. God, I don't know what's around the next corner or where the next Y leads in the road. We talk about the proof being in the pudding. Go back to Genesis chapter 11. The whole earth is the same language, the same words, in the same location. They've journeyed east together, and remember, this is right after the flood, so we're talking about a much smaller population than we had before or we have now. And they make it to the plains of Shinar. And they decide, you know, this is a really nice place to live. So let's make some brick, and let's build a city, and let's build a tower that reaches heaven, and let's stay together. Let's keep the same language, and let's make a name for ourselves. Let's make the news. Let's make the front page. From their perspective, it's a good plan. Things stick together. There's strength in numbers, and so they don't have to spread out and in their minds be weakened. And they can build a legacy. But when God, and I put it there in quotation marks, discovers what they're doing, He intervenes. The best laid plans of mice and men. God says, no. That's not the plan. You didn't include me in this. And so I'm going to make it where you can't talk to your neighbor. And so you're going to have to fight your way through the crowd and find the few people that have the same language as you now. And you guys are going to have to go off and start your own community. Why? Because they left God out of their plans. Man had taken over to direct his own steps. Why? Because their opposition was in, their plan was in opposition to God's. Do you remember what they were told to do? We'll read it in a minute, but they're told to be fruitful, multiply, spread out, and populate the earth. Why? Why do their plans? Because we do not even have the ability to predict tomorrow's weather with 100% certainty and accuracy. By the grace of God, we've been wrong, but we've been predicting widespread tornadoes and destruction for 3 weeks. God said, no, not this time. We can't even predict tomorrow's weather. How can we plan our future? James chapter 4, verse 13 through 17. And I'm going to encourage you to turn over there because I want you to note a few things of tremendous importance beyond, and we get the vapor part, and certainly that plays into what we're talking about. And then we get the last verse. But I want you to catch the rest of it. Come now, you who say. You remember that point where grandmother or granddaddy or mama or daddy or the... Come here. Sit down. And you knew a lesson was coming. Might not be what you wanted to hear, but it was going to be what you needed. James says, I'm the practical guy, so come here. Now sit down. He said, I want you to think about something. Stop everything you're doing. And you can follow the text. I'm just going to kind of paraphrase and summarize. Stop all the planning. Stop all the buying to take your goods somewhere. And I want you to think about this. Here you are with your finite little pea brain compared to God's. And you're making all of these plans. You have your plans for tomorrow. You have your plans for the rest of today. You have your plans for next year. You may have your plans for the next decade. James says, let me tell you something. You have absolutely no idea what tomorrow will bring. He said, when you get up in the morning, it's a new day and it's the first time you've been there. And you have no idea what it's going to have. So he said, don't you think it would make a little bit of sense to slow down and include God in the planning? God's a God of eternity. God's already in tomorrow and next week and next year. He knows how it turns out. So wouldn't it make sense as you're planning out the rest of your life that you ask God, what do you think about this? God, where's this going to end me up? So, let's interrupt for a second. Why would it make sense to include God? Because all of the human planning in the world cannot cover every hiccup, every contingency. Satan gets involved. Your neighbor gets involved. Illness gets involved. Genesis 11, God gets involved. And things change. Number two, James says it'd be smart to include God in this, and we're going back to the text now, because God's plans rule. God's in control. God is sovereign. And any attempt to usurp those plans, any attempt to ignore those plans, verse 16, he says, is arrogant. So basically, where we're at, James said, come here. Sit down. Who do you think you are? What do you think you're doing? He said, by the way, they're not just arrogant, they're evil. And then in the context, and sometimes we rip this passage out of its, in the context of that, coming and reasoning and thinking about our plans, he said, by the way, making your own plans is sinful. Verse 17. So I want you to run back to Babel now. Run back to Genesis 11. I already referenced it, but now we're going to look at it. What are they supposed to be doing after the flood? Genesis 9 in verse 1, after Noah's celebration, after Noah's offering and his conversation with God, God says, look, we're going back to the plan in Genesis 1 to spread out, fill this earth, subdue it. Verse 7, by the way, in case you missed verse 1, be fruitful, multiply, spread out. Fill the earth. But they defy God. Let's stick together. Let's build a city. Let's build a tower. They try to circumvent the plan. So God makes sure they have absolutely no choice but to do what He told them to do. You're now speaking Italian and you're now speaking Chinese. You're not going to be able to speak to each other. At some point, you're not going to be able to get along. So why don't you go over there and you go down there and do what I told you to do. As we have worked our way through this model of evangelism in Bible class, I want you to think about Babel now, and I'm going to ask you the question, does it sound familiar? It does to me. Remember what we've learned. I want you to think back to what we've learned in Acts 1 and Acts 8. Acts chapter 1, verse 8. Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the uttermost parts of the world. I need you to take step one, step two, step three, step four. I need you to spread out and be fruitful, multiply, conquer the world. At the end of chapter 7, they are still in Jerusalem. The folks that descended on Jerusalem and came up to Jerusalem for Pentecost, a whole lot of them have stayed. They've saturated the city with the gospel. They're still there. So God uses Saul's rampage as a way of spreading them out. Acts chapter 8, verse 1, and we've read it in Bible class, I know, but please bear with me. You've got to see this. Saul was in hearty agreement with putting Stephen to death at the end of chapter 7. By the way, if you'll come back tonight, we're going to talk about Stephen in chapter 7. And that day, a great persecution arose against the church in Jerusalem, and they were scattered throughout the regions of Judea, Samaria, except for the apostles. God has work for them in Jerusalem. And they bury Stephen. They make loud lamentations, but Saul is ravaging the church. He's entering houses. He's dragging people off to their trials and ultimately to the prison and to death. In verse 4, therefore they went abroad, everyone, preaching the word. God had a plan. They had done the first part of it, weren't taking the second step. So God said, here, I'm going to use what's happening to send you on the second step. So first thing this morning, we have to understand that any plan, at least any plan that we want to succeed, must include God. Let me give you another really quick example. We just used where it doesn't succeed when we leave God out. Babel's a good plan from a human perspective. God makes sure it fails. So what's the opposite? When the book of Joshua opens, there is going to be the worst military plan for conquering a city in the history of mankind. If it was Joshua's plan, it is doomed. Walk around the city once a day for 6 days. Don't make a peep. Go back home, eat dinner, go to bed, get up and do it again. Then on the last day, let's do it 7 times. And then we're going to shout at the end of it, and the walls are going to fall down. Yeah, right. Okay. It's not going to work unless God's involved in the plan. Since it's God's plan, what happens? Every kid in here who's ever been to Bible class can tell me the walls fell down. All right, so you've got a good human plan that fails because God's excluded, and you've got a terrible human plan that succeeds because God is included. Any plan that we want to succeed, business plan, individual plan, family plan, social plan, evangelistic plan, church plan, must include God or we will fail. If not in this life, in the next. got to include him in the planning. We have to include him in the blessing part so that the plan is successful. We have to include him in the execution. God, what's the next step? What's the next step? What's the next step? And we have to include him in the outcome, which means not only involving him in the process that gets us there, but remembering that he's the one that got us there. Second thing. This is really quick. Regardless the area of life you are considering this morning, God has a plan. God always has a plan. God is the ultimate planner. Not very long ago, we learned some lessons from that weeping prophet. Do you remember what God told him at the very beginning of that call in Jeremiah 1 and verse 5? I formed you in the womb. I'm going to take credit. I made you. Now then, but look at that very first word. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I consecrated you. I appointed you to be a prophet to the nations. By the way, Jeremiah, before your mother and daddy ever got married, I had a plan for you. Now then, it's up to you at this point whether or not you accept the plan, but if you want to be successful, here it is. God always has a plan. He has a plan for evangelism. We've already talked about it. The power of evangelism, Romans 1 and verse 16, the gospel is God's power unto salvation. I cannot take any other message to this world and win the world. He's got a plan for the progression. We just mentioned it, Acts chapter 1 and verse 8. In our case, it's Coxie and then Limestone County and then Alabama and then the world. He has a plan for the practice of it. Chapter 8 and verse 4. Let's go door to door. Let's touch individuals. He has a plan for its purpose. Why am I going to evangelize? Not to make the world a better place, even though that's a great thing. Not to save my nation, even though that's a great thing. The purpose of evangelism is to seek and save the lost. God has a plan for my joy. Flip over to Philippians chapter 4. Flip to Philippians. I like that. He has a power for my joy. Verses 11 through 13. I don't speak from want. I've learned to be content in whatever my circumstances. I can get along in humble means. I can get along in prosperity, in any and every circumstance. I've learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, having abundance and suffering need. Here's the power, because I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. He has a progression for it, verses 6 and 7. Make your prayer, make your supplication, lay everything at the foot of God, or the feet of God, and He'll give you that peace that passes all understanding. You'll find your joy if you follow the plan. He has a practice for it. Rejoice always. And again, I will tell you to rejoice. And He has a purpose for it. John chapter 10. That we may have abundant life. God's got a plan. He's got a plan for growth. And it's the same one. It's got the power. And it's got the progression. And it's got the practice. And it's got the purpose, if you go find it, of why and how I go about my personal spiritual growth, my service, my vocation. God has a plan. God has a plan for my marriage, for my home, for my children, and on and on and on. If you will take the time to look, God has a plan for every aspect of your life. And if you find that plan, and you include God in the planning, because you've already got a purpose, you've already got a passion, you've already made it a priority. Now if you'll become a pupil, and we're actually going to talk about that in a couple of weeks, of this book, you'll find God's plan. And if God has a plan and I want to succeed, I better fall in step. So find it. I've been begging you since January 1, find your purpose for this year. light a fire that develops into an inferno, make it your priority, and then take this next step. Here's the last thing. God has a plan for your salvation too. It's not in man to direct his steps. God tried everything he could possibly try to get us to catch on, and we couldn't. So God sent his son. Sent him to die because I didn't have a sacrifice worthy to offer to him to pay my debt. Wages of sin is death. So God said, here, I'll pay it for you, and I'll stamp it paid in full if you'll believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. And upon that belief, if you will put it into action and you will repent of your sins, you will change from one way of life to another. You'll confess him before this world and you'll be baptized. I'll wash those sins away. If I do that, follow the plan, I get eternal life. In the end, the last day's coming. Those who follow their own plans or follow the plans of another instead of the plans of God are going to find themselves in the same predicament. And if you grew up watching it, and it was amazing because it was the one cartoon that if it was on in the room, my daddy would come through and stop. He loved Wile E. Coyote. But if you notice at the end of every cartoon, he is in the same predicament. And if I follow any other plan in my evangelism, in my growth, in my service, in my salvation, in my family, in my home, I'm going to find myself in the same predicament. And when I stand before God, I might as well say, that's all, folks. Because there's nothing to help me at that point. So we stand and sing.